But yesterday we had in the representative from the Auditor General's office.
Welcome.
and giving all the nurses here, and she also listens to us as we ask questions, and also we advise all the comments, the reading comments, because I guess from now, from the day we started in the Fifth Parliament, we gained a lot of insight into the work that we do, and we could also advise them. And, since we interacted with them for the first time, I think it's really important that we also introduce ourselves, so that we don't take it for granted that we've interacted with them elsewhere. My name is Matilda Coleman, the chair of the committee. Today I would like you to introduce yourself. I normally introduce you, but it will be important that you introduce yourself so that they can also hear your voice. I'll start with the beginning.
Attention. Good morning. Anulami is the member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair, members, and the department.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Shilo Ali Kleani. I am a member of the committee. I represent the African National Congress.
Kelo Hage, I'm a chair from the Hamasini. I represent the ANC in the local committee.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Chase Moses, representing the ANC member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Kobes Marie, member of the committee.
Good morning, I'm Patrick Atkinson, I'm a member of the committee and of the Democratic Alliance.
Good morning, my name is Nicole Mata, I represent the economist of the Lombard.
Good morning, my name is Pedro Viga, I'm from the National Student Party.
But you two colleagues, you are members of this committee, yes? Okay. You know why I'm saying that? Because everyone was saying I'm a member of the committee. And when it came to you, you represented your political values. Okay, thank you for that.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Shirley Sanchez from the committee of the agenda.
Thank you very much. I'm just introducing myself up there.
Good morning, my name is Tanisha. I'm the secretary of the Chamber.
Good morning, my name is Naomi Peterson. I'm the secretary to the work of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nadine. I'm from PNG.
What's PNG?
Sorry, Jack, the Parliamentary Monitoring Group is in jail.
Okay. I think we all know by now who PNG is. Thank you. I'm asking you what PNG is because members have been complaining about this many times. We often get confused. Thank you. Okay, this is the team PMGs based in Parliament. They normally attend all our meetings. They take notes so that they can also be able to advise the people, especially in terms of the constituents or the stakeholders, Parliament stakeholders. Yes. Dede Kumalo, you will introduce your team and then get to the business of the day.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, honorable members. But my name is Bongani Kumalo. I chair the Financial and Fiscal Commission. I am accompanied by, to my left, Mr. Khalid Dawood, who is our Financial Budget Analysis Program Manager. To my right are the Mr. Peters, who looks after our National Budget Analysis Program, and Mr. Henry Exton next to her is our Parliamentary Liaison Officer based in our Cape Town office. Honourable Chair, let me thank you and the members of the committee for the invitation to come in and share some thoughts with yourselves on the work of the Department of Economic Development, and also making some comments and observations around the work of the entities that fall under the department. Maybe since you have indicated that I can see that the members in this committee now are almost all of them new, so we haven't actually met in this particular committee. Maybe let me start off by introducing what the Financial Register Commission is, and just briefly on the mandate and what it does. In terms of the Financial and Fiscal Commission, it was established in terms of Section 220 of the Constitution as an independent constitutional institution to enforce under the umbrella of those institutions supporting democracy that were established by the Constitution. Unlike most of them that are found in Chapter 9, the Financial and Fiscal Commission is in Chapter 13 of the It functions in terms of national legislation, primary legislation that enables the Commission's mandate of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act of 1997, amended in 2003. Its mandate is primarily to make recommendations and issues in Chapter 13 of the Constitution, and they range from recommendations on the division of revenue, between and among the three spheres of government, the issues around the best powers of the different spheres of government, the borrowing powers, issues around the fiscal framework in general, and any other financial and fiscal measure that the legislation may, that the Commission may of its own accord decide to make advice and recommendations or to any organs of state. So the Commission has got a very wide mandate, but in terms of its own capacity, basically tackles specific types of things on an annual basis. There is expectation on a submission 10 months before the Minister tables the budget, the Commission must submit its recommendations for that particular financial year. So for the 2015 yeah, we tackled those recommendations in May already. So they are part of the discussions on the budget process for 2015 budget. I think the Commission's concern is primarily with intergovernmental fiscal relations. That would include legislative provisions or executive decisions that affect either provincial or local government on a financial and official perspective. It includes regulations associated with legislation that may amend or extend such legislation. And there is a very clear requirement that any decisions that are taken, executive or otherwise, which would have implications for another sphere of government, have to be consulted, as long as those financial and fiscal implications of the financial and fiscal measure, the Commission then has to be consulted. Now, without the consultation of the Commission, then such a decision is legally unenforceable. In other words, it's legally invalid. The current strategy that the FSC has adopted is to focus its attention on the developmental impacts of the intergovernmental fiscal relations system. Now, on a different day, I would have gone through the strategic issues that we're focusing on, but trying to
idea is to try and redirect the work of the commission so that it aligns with the general objectives of the National Development Plan. And so there's quite a substantial amount of work that we are doing, and I think this particular department is one of the key pillars in that process, because there has to be some linkages between national, local, and provincial types of plans aligned to the National Development Plan. That must be coordinated primarily through the Department of Economic Development. And it's actually quite a central department. And I think Chairperson, you recall that in our last briefing to you, we did raise the issue of intergovernmental relations within that a sector of economic development that we felt were still not very strong, especially in relation to the work that we have done and respect to the role that local government and provincial government should be playing with respect to economic development. I think it's actually quite important that maybe I make reference to a recommendation that we made in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. I can be corrected, but it was a recommendation that was speaking about how best we can start thinking about tackling the issue of economic growth in South Africa. Because South African economy, in terms of its growth performance, has not actually performed its potential for quite a long time. There could be reasons for that. And one of the recommendations that we had made was to call for a growth commission that would be established specifically to look at how we can actually deal with the economic growth issue. And that would be a commission that basically looks across the three spheres of government so that everything that we do is coordinated and is actually very, very well targeted. So that's something that I think is still relevant. Next slide. Now, coming to the presentation, I think this presentation with a graph that shows the background against which the Department of Economic Development is actually performing. You see the red line. The red line shows employment growth, and the blue bar shows you the unemployment rate. These are official statistics, so I won't want to discuss the merit and demerits of those numbers. As a commission, we use official statistics, so somebody else might tell some different types of numbers. But the picture that we see there is basically a worrying, presently a worrying trend, especially given where we want to go in terms of the objectives of the National Development Plan. We are almost like that now. That picture there shows a story around the Gini coefficient, a very crude measure, but still an important indicator of income distribution. So what I'm trying to tell you here is that there are two basic challenges that this department is actually faced with and the broader sector. The two challenges of unemployment and income distribution. And so that basically shows us the background. These are very negative. Now, if we then start thinking about the requirements for the National Development Plan, what I can say is that basically that South Africa, if South Africa still in some way from restoring the strong sustainable economic growth that is required by the National Development Plan, the growth forecast in 2014 is expected at around 1.7% compared to the previously projected 2.1%. There are a number of reasons why this has been revised downwards, but some of the key ones are relates to the strikes and the instability in the mining and the manufacturing sectors. Inflation is expected to average around 6.3% in 2014 compared to 6.2% which was the previous figure.
a large leadership driven by teachers and appreciation, inclusion in the prices of goods, and possibly might have to be worsened by the wage price spiral resulting from higher than expected wage settlements, which tend to be in excess of inflation and productivity growth. Now, we can see that if you look at that red line in the graph that I presented at the beginning, it shows that there are some steps, there are some points where employment actually grows, and then there are some places where it actually drops. Now, overall, employment increased by 43,000 jobs in the year to end March 2014. 29,000 jobs were created in the public sector, while the private sector shared jobs. So there's a balancing exercise at play there. The private sector is sharing jobs, the public sector is creating jobs. And that's not what one generally be expecting for sustained economic growth. The public sector, obviously, because we're coming from a recession and because of the counter-cyclical fiscal policy stance that the government has taken, one would expect that there would be growing employment in the public sector, because what it means is that the public sector spends more when the economy is down, but that is simply to create an enabling environment so that the private sector can come in and participate and create the real sustainable jobs. That has not been the case, that has not been happening. And so this is a big challenge going forward. Now, the global economy reflects a mixed picture with the easing of risks in some regions, Japan and the UK, while other regions reflect toward the outlook, the US and Brazil, and also Russia. Now, this is important because South Africa is a very open economy, and in a global environment, it also depends quite a lot on its trade with these countries. And if you actually think about the past few days, you would see that the deficit of the current account, the current account is actually depreciated. And that basically means that we probably are also living beyond our means. Or it might mean that people are not buying as much as they would expect them to be buying from us. And that creates an imbalance on our macroeconomic aggregates that actually has an impact on our growth path. Now, the economic growth is expected to improve over the medium term to 3.1% in 2015 and growing again to 3.4% in 2016. Now, I should say here that back in 2008, when the global economic crisis set in, we at the Financial and Fiscal Commission presented a picture to Parliament, which basically showed that the economy would, if the worst case scenario transpired, there were three cases. One would be called business as usual, if South Africa does nothing in response to the global economic crisis and just continues on the path that it was going, then what would actually transpire? If South Africa then decided to act and the global economy responds to that, what would be? Now, so we had a business as usual, a moderate scenario, and a worst case scenario, which was a severe, which is called the severe scenario. Now, the severe scenario would be in that particular exercise driven by the reaction to the crisis by the global economy. In other words, how fast does the globe recover from the global economic crisis? Now, the globe took a very long time to recover from the global economic crisis. Now, because of that elongated time frame for recovery, the impact on the South African economy was actually quite heavy. And in terms of our projections, we projected that we will actually recover by 2015, which is actually quite strange, because it looks like, in terms of the projections that we have now, even from our own modeling with the Commission, shows that 2015 probably will start picking up. Now,
obviously that's assuming that there are no breaches internally, like we have heard that you can't anticipate and the strikes that we've had and all of that. So in terms of the natural progression of the South African economy, one is we've expected, just driven by the global economic crisis recovery to occur in 2015. But one of the key findings there was that we would not be able to recover to get back to the same growth path at which we were going before the global economic crisis. This basically means, as I said before in my opening remarks, it means that there is something about the structure of the South African economy that must change in order that we can generate higher levels of economic growth. And that's just something that we need to think about, and that probably drove us to come up with a recommendation of a growth commission or something like that. So the projections obviously are sensitive to future supply side shocks such as labor disruptions, electricity shortages, and the possibility of credit rating agency decisions. I think South Africa tends to be quite sensitive to the ratings, the decisions by credit rating agencies, and so we do see those types of impacts affecting the way the economy responds. Moderate inflation is expected over the medium term, 5.9% forecast for 2015, 5.5% for 2016. The medium-term global outlook does present both opportunities and risks. With respect to advanced economies, they are expected to grow at a slower pace than emerging economies over the medium term. And with the emerging economies, there are opportunities within the risk. There's sort of a bridge kind of arrangement that have been undertaken with the BRICS countries for South Africa, so there are opportunities there. There is also a risk of the fiscal tightening in the United States, and that's a potentially a big risk. And then global commodity prices are expected to fall over the medium term, which would also damage the export performance for South Africa. And I think it's important that one raises this issue of commodity prices. Why at this particular point in time in South Africa is still relying on commodities on its export side? I think there has to be something that needs to change, and hopefully we are moving in that direction. Now, to achieve the National Development Plan targets, the economy needs to grow by 5.4% per annum to be able to eliminate poverty and reduce inequality by 2030. Now, the numbers that I presented, and coupled with the fact that I say in terms of the economy, when we modeled it in 2007 and we projected, including the global economic crisis, what we saw was that we were never going to go beyond what we were at before prior to the global economic crisis. And that basically means that this 5.4% cannot be achieved if we continue the way in which we've been going, which is basically our business as usual targets. We're not going to be able to do that. So there has to be some changes that must be happening. And I think part of those changes basically lie within the areas, new areas of innovation and the knowledge economy, and taking advantage of those types of areas. And I think the government has taken quite a very positive step in generating or investing in knowledge or in innovation type of areas through investment in higher education, research in particular. One would actually expect that there would be some benefits coming out of such investment. The real issue basically is that we need to deepen the skills base of the South African economy without improved health outcomes and different skills base. Even if you do anything, I mean, you will not be able to actually generate the levels of economic growth that you want to ultimately generate and to change the structure of the economy.
outcomes in health and improved outcomes in education. That's those are the non-negotiables of basically, which is that way. Now, the National Development Planning Initiative is declining unemployment from 24.9% to 14% over the period. The Economic Development Department developed the NGP framework in 2010, and the NGP has a shorter time frame than the NGP and the strategy to achieve NGP goals, which is aimed at taking the country on a higher growth trajectory and create 5 million jobs over 10 years. Largely through investment in infrastructure, and I think the infrastructure program has begun to actually take course on something that one has to welcome. I think let me at this point then stop here on the general environment within which the department is actually operating and some of what one would consider to be the key considerations that one has to look at if you have to assess the performance of this department, how it is doing in mitigating some of the issues that we have actually highlighted. And I will hand over to Mr. Ali Dawood to actually take you through some of the key issues that we've picked up.
Good morning, honorable members. Moving on to the background of the Department of Economic Development. The department was started, as you know, in 2009, which was just shortly after the recession that took place. And it basically assumed that the main responsibility of providing for creating jobs through inclusive growth, as well as the implementation of the new growth plan. And as Bati has mentioned, the new growth plan is basically a strategy to take South Africa as new growth. That basically takes South Africa on to higher growth trajectory. Now, in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, the department contributes to two important outcomes. One is inclusive growth, and the second one is on economic infrastructure. Inclusive growth in terms of making sure that it is able to coordinate with key stakeholders and players within the private and public sector to create jobs and to basically implement those projects that are on the integrated infrastructure plan, as well as at the same time to make sure that it is able to provide key policies in order to boost employment, especially among the youth. Now, the department has four main programs: administration, economic policy and development, that looks at making sure that there is an enabling environment to create jobs in South Africa. Economic planning coordination, which is really where most of the entities are located. And then economic development and dialogue, which is where the social compacts are more or less managed in terms of the department. Now, the department is responsible for five public entities. Two of them are development finance entities, which is your small enterprise finance agency and industrial development corporation, and it also has three regulatory bodies such as the Competition Commission, the Competition Tribunal, and then also the International Trade Administration Commission of South Africa. Now, which means that the responsibility of the department is quite critical in terms of providing oversight as well as strategic direction for those particular public entities that are under its responsibility. Now, moving on to the spending of the department, looking back from 2010-2011, what we notice is that the spending of the department between 2010 and 2011 and 2013-14 has nearly doubled from 400 million rand to 771 million rand. And that is largely due to increases in compensation of employees, goods and services, transit and facilities. And also, quite importantly, what this increase is really the department establishing itself and implementing its mandate so that it is able to fulfill what is contained within the NGP. Now, part of the significant increase is also the 180 million rand which is provided between 2011, 2013, 2014 as capitalization for the Agriculture and Property Business Fund under the Industrial Development Corporation. Now, something just to note, in the previous slide, sorry, just one note, notice that compared to the historical pattern of spending, what is quite key to note here is that in terms of the FTE going forward, there's actually a real a decline of 6.47% over the annual decline in terms of the department's budget. And this is really the significant drop is for program 3, which declines by 6.38%. Now, what we saw, part of the reductions that we noticed in the previous table is a reduction of 146 million rand cut to small enterprise finance agency. As we have noted previously, the small enterprise finance agency is really there to expand participation as well as diversify economic participation among SMEs. And therefore, this reduction is therefore means that there is less capital available for lending to SMEs. Also, part of the reduction is due to cost-cutting measures that that have been implemented in terms of making sure that we are able to reallocate resources from non-core items to those items that are important in terms of service delivery. Now, over the Indian period, the increases that that have been allocated to the various programs are the redefined processes in the department, as well as reduced reliance on consultants by putting this post, and also additional funds that are being available to the especially the region. Now, moving on to the program spending, and I apologize for that graph, that doesn't really something happened to the format, but essentially, what it's trying to show is that in terms of the allocation per program, 83% of the total funding is allocated to the third program, which is economic, economic planning and coordination, and that is really where the public entities are actually located. Moving on to the next slide, which basically looks at how the department speaks in terms of the line item allocation. What we do note is that if we look at the historical spending, we note that the compensation of employees increased by 40% per annum in real terms from 2011 to 2013-14, and also goods and services increased by 81%. And those two line items really affect the fact that the department is basically spending on getting itself started up, such as your office infrastructure, recruiting new staff, and also purchasing IT equipment so that the staff is able to operate within the department. Also, over the MTN period, quite important to notice that as mentioned earlier on, the department is increasing its compensation employees by 30%. Currently, the department has a staff establishment of 166, and they have got 129 staff at the end of 2013-2014 financial year. So there are a number of posts in the department, and the department can take all these posts over the MTN period. There's a noticeable drop in goods and services, and that, like mentioned earlier on, that not is really to indicate the department trying to reallocate from core services and channeling funds to fund the service delivery deliverables. Now, if we look at the promises and subsidies line item, it basically makes up 80% of the total budget of the department. And if we look at how spending is over the empty period, we notice that there is a significant decline in the growth of allocations to public entities. And that decline is really reflective of the spending cuts that has been made to shape up the Small Enterprise Finance Agency. Now moving on to the next slide, and here essentially what we're looking at is how the department spent in terms of the allocations that it received at the port which is sitting. And if you look at so some of the reasons for that, the department is actually two main reasons. There are a few others, but the main reason is that a slow procurement process in terms of capital asset procurement, and also slow process in terms of qualification process. And this we see across almost all of the programs and both financial years 2012 as well as 2013. Now, moving on to looking into the cash management performance of the department, and here essentially what we're trying to see is how good is the department in terms of spending the funds over 12 months cycle. And if we look at the three periods, 2011, 2012, 2012, 13, and 13, 14, what we see there is that the department has, in certain months, specifically in the cash flow disbursement schedule. And if you notice that where those things take place, that happens largely in May, July, October, and January. And that is largely where disbursements to public entities take place. But if you look at, if you compare 2014 to 2012, 2013, you actually see that the peaks have become much higher than the previous year, 2012, 2013. So in other words, the cash flow performance has actually become much more elastic in 2014 compared to 2013. What this indicates is that the department is unable to maintain consistent improvement in its cash flow disbursements over time. Now, by smoothing expenditure through building up of transfers to entities across each quarter, the department is able to improve cash flow efficiency in that way. Chair, I will now hand over to my colleague Sasha Pierce that will take us through the list of participants.
Before you hand over to your just explain further the smoothing aspect of the percentage. What do you mean when you say much more?
Yeah, so if we
look at the phasing of the transfer, and because this is related to cash flow, that's why I want to know the question. Normally, when I look at this picture, it's around November, December in terms of 2013 and 2014. That's where you see the fire. But then I just want to understand what's going on, what you mean, so that we can, when we ask questions, we can
understand. Generally, over 12 months, I think the department plans its cash management disbursements. Usually what the department's trying to do is to smooth out the disbursements over 12 months cycle, so that essentially what you are able to do is to ensure that you basically have a consistent pattern in the way that you actually allocate your resources over 12 month period, so that you know more or less how you actually spend your funds. So in other words, if you spend in terms of the 12 months, you can't do the normal by the end of the month of the financial year, and it's the skip of 50% of the allocation. No more is that you are practicing the full allocation for the financial year because your previous spending patterns are such that you spend 50% over a 6 month period. But if you have a particular spending pattern like you have got in this case, essentially you are unable to really know where you stand in terms of how you spend and whether you spend your full allocation over the financial year. So you could have a situation, for example, in October, where you only spend, let's say, 50% of your budget, and you still have to spend 70% of the remaining budget. And you're not sure whether you will be able to spend it or not. And this is really where expenses smoothly comes into play, so that you have a better understanding of essentially how you're spending and whether we are actually going to be spending our full budget. Now, if you look at the previous slide that we had previously, we looked at the spending of the different programs, you will note that there's a correlation between the spending, illegal spending, and also the underspending that's taking place in the other programs. And I think part of the reason is that there could be an issue in terms of managing cash flow effectively in the department.
When
you
ask questions, let us just clarify that.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair, members of the committee and other colleagues. I'll take you through the last couple of slides which focus on departmental performance. What our analysis shows is that the EDD exceeded target for 2012-13 compared to the 73% of targets that were met in 2011-12. Our assessment indicates that most of the indicators reported on in the 2012-13 annual report on new indicators, which may suggest that the department is expanding its scope of work. We picked up a couple of issues with respect to the indicators, namely the fact that a number of them lead as activities and were not really strategic in nature. Also, a number of them were really opaque. For example, it could be a statement such as sector methodology is developed and applied with no real information provided. Most of the performance indicators have also been revised when one looks at the annual performance plan for 2014-15 and has significantly increased when you compare it to previous years, which again suggests that the scope of work and also has broadened. But it could also imply an attempt to achieve greater alignment between the department's activities and the medium-term strategic framework. An important point picked up is that just a sort of superficial overview of the departmental ABP may suggest greater alignment, but when we did some deeper analysis, what we saw is that the indicators are not really showing alignment with targets and indicators in a number of key macro plans, including the National Growth Plan, the Infrastructure Plan, and indeed the Medium-Term Strategic Framework. For the current? Yes. We have inserted a slide related to asset quality by the AG, but we noticed that the AG is on the agenda, so I'm sure they will have more to say on this issue than us. Moving on to the entities and agencies that fall under the department, the five entities and agencies fall under the auspices of the DDD. They are the Competition Commission, who mainly looks at cases relating to abuse of dominant position in the economy of particular industries. There's the Competition Tribunal, who acts as an adjudicator with respect to large corporate mergers. The Industrial Development Corporation, which is essentially a national development finance institution. And the International Trade Administration Commission of South Africa, whose core focus is on patent investigation, trade remedies, and import and export control issues. The fifth one is the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, which is a subsidiary of the IDC, and its main objective is to increase access to development finance for small businesses. What this slide illustrates is the amount transferred to each entity as of April 2012 and the amount spent at the end of the period March 2013. And generally, the entities have showed sound spending performance, but when we compare this to some of the audit outcomes, we pick up things such as procurement irregularities, illegal expenditure, etc. So I think the second message from this slide is that, and that's useful for oversight activities, is that you can look at spending performance, and that may be sound, but obviously also need to look at what those resources were spent on. Was it achieving the objectives that the department had set out to do? And this is where oversight by the EDD is critical. One can outsource activities to an agency, but it is actually the department, the responsible department, that needs to monitor and essentially ensure that objectives are met. Actually, this slide details the regulatory frameworks surrounding a department and entities reporting to it. Essentially, the Public Finance Management Act is the piece of legislation that provides for an accountability framework for public entities. It is this act that sets out reporting requirements that must be adhered to. And it's also the PSMA that calls for a shield of compact between a lead department such as EDD and its various entities. Just to give you an idea of what shield of compact includes, it includes aspects related to the governance arrangement of an entity. It defines the responsibility of the executive authority in the case of EDD and the board of the entity and its management. So again, just to reiterate that PDD as the executive authority of these five entities, it is the department's responsibility to monitor performance and, of entities under its control. As you may be aware, the work of the Commission culminates each year in the effort to make recommendations to Parliament on a range of issues, and thought that we should perhaps list two recommendations that may be relevant to the work of this committee. Both of them relate to job creation, and these recommendations were made in the EPC submission for the 2013-14 Division of Revenue. The first one really calls on government to redirect government spending towards activities that directly or indirectly create jobs, enhancing productivity, performance, and we provide quite a lot of detail on what we mean to that. We mean that activities such as healthcare, durable goods, manufacturing, funding should go to those sectors. The gist of government's response to that recommendation was that as a government we already have a number of job creation initiatives underway. So essentially not really constant response. The second recommendation calls for government to develop and implement credible job plans for each tier of government, and that government should aim to ensure collaboration across the range of actors, applicable range of actors, not only employers, but also unions, economic development agencies, sectors, as well as key players in the education sector. With respect to this recommendation, there was no response. I'm not sure if my students in the start into that issue, but I think for now that is the end of our presentation.
Thank you very much, Bakumado and the colleagues, for the presentation. I guess from the economic outlook issues to the administrative, both financial and non-financial information given or analysis given, we can now begin to interact with it. Ask many questions if you can. That's the only opportunity. That is Kian, followed by Mr. Mare, Babi Kinini, the Atkinson, Babu Bacha, and Ungoma, no, not Ungoma, Mabika. Yes, that's Mabika.
I thank the honorable chairperson, and we thank the FFC for the presentation, which is eye-opening. The last time I had FFC in my mind was years ago, I think, during the time of my funeral, I think it was the chair at one point or another. But obviously, this is a critical institution. Critical institution for our government. Let's just get an understanding how this, you know, body works. Obviously, this is an organization of professionals and they are reasoning. It's not your everyday type of reasoning. They look at things very, very differently. I see in the presentation, Chairperson, they acknowledge that the department was established in 2009 and that on an ongoing basis the department is trying to establish the type of structures that would enable it to achieve its mandate. Now, if that is the case, if the FFC is not in a position also to can say that process of building this structure has stopped, that the presentation does not fit. So it implies that possibly this construction of structures and so on is a process that may possibly be going on for some time. And if that is the case, it implies that it will be very difficult for government, including the EGT, general government, to be able to expect some kind of stabilization, especially in terms of expenditure. Because I understand that the logic that they are putting across, they say they want to expect that there should be some kind of a system that you follow. I agree with them. But if your train changes today for 10 coaches and you may have 15 next year and so on, I think, in my humble view, it would be almost difficult to try and achieve that. So I would appreciate if they can explain further as to what they think should be done, because even on the issue of oversight, yes, I agree with them, the department itself must be able to take care of stock and everything, even before the Auditor General comes in. I agree with them. But if you've only been established in 2009, and there are all these factors, international factors, negative factors, that affect everybody in the world, and you're still trying to establish this department in a developmental state of art, how do you go about that issue? And finally, Chairperson, I would like Mr. Kumalo's team to explain the theory around, the comparison of inequalities and so on, as seen through the eyes of Mr. Corrado, Gini, the Italian, who came up with the system. My view is that Mr. Gini was influenced, as a European, he was influenced mostly by, the environment in Europe, which democratized many, many centuries ago, and whose economies are obviously very, very strong. So their reasoning and so on is basically influenced by the material conditions in Europe. Now, if you use his principles to try and gauge what is happening, for instance, in South Africa, without necessarily remembering that we are only 20 years in our democracy, and that essentially the wealth of this country is still, by and large, in the hands of a few whites. Would the principles that you use of Mr. Gini necessarily be able to reflect the truth of what is happening in South Africa? Or is the purpose just to use it as a position that is supported by the United Nations? Because obviously everywhere you go, they speak of the Gini coefficients and so on. It's an accepted parameter that is used. Let me pause the chairperson. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Kane. I guess Makumalo will have to respond to some of your questions and your comments. Mr. Mara?
Thank you very much, Jay. Thank you very much for the presentation. My first question, it's in response to what came last in your presentation, is, you've given us your role and function, but given, the recommendations that you make is basically, so what? What is your actual role? If you make recommendations, does it carry any weight? Is there any obligation to comply with these things? Or is it just nice to have, they can take it abroad or not, and nothing will happen from there. So it's just for me to understand, what is your authority in this regard, and to help us into the right direction, because you clearly mentioned that economic development hasn't been performed as required to get the move forward in terms of where we want to be and where we need to be. So the first one. And second, this is on the on the Gini coefficient as well. I mean, I obviously differ with the previous speaker, but let that be. My question rather be on the Gini coefficient. What in your opinion contributed to the improvement of the Gini coefficient? It's still relatively high, but there's been an improvement in the Gini coefficient. And what are those things? Then in terms of the background that you've mentioned, you have referred to the increase in the inflation as really from a demand side. It seems like you concentrate on the demand side. But what is the offset in terms of improved export revenue on that? So in other words, that is the net position that you are reporting on. But I mean, surely there's then a certain peak. So, you know, like you always say, you know, on average, is, you know, if you're concerned on two mainlands and somewhere in the line there's nothing or there's fish and sharks that can bite you. So what are those two things that levels you look at and have you look at the offset of the increased export revenue due to a depreciated rent? On the jobs that you've mentioned, you mentioned the overall jobs have increased by 42,000. But if you look at the graph on page 3, I mean, it seems like the unemployment rate is probably at 4.5%, and unemployment 0.018%. I can't see, you know, is it purely because sometimes this is also about averages. For me, it's rather important to look at how many jobs have been lost that we should have preserved. Because if you are losing too many jobs, you are always fighting to get back. While you can preserve as many jobs as possible and grow jobs, then you've got this accumulative effect. And I would very much like to know the real situation. We missed about 49,000 were created. My loss is 29,000. I know that's the next figure. I know because you haven't mentioned agricultural, which is the main job driver of this minister. I think it was also the Reserve Bank that mentioned 73,000 were lost on net. Well, there was actually those that were lost, there were 416,000. So those are more the alarming figures, not just the net that might look very small. It seems like you are still okay, while you have lost so much, so you're going to never be able to pick up. So what are these real figures in terms of the actual jobs that we have lost, and how many of that is in your opinion that we should preserve? Because that will help us. Then, on the global economic picture, that I think that our risk is attached to is very much like BRICS. What is the situation with China and India? I'm sure you have looked at that. Within the BRICS bloc, if I can use that phrase, that is quite important for us. So if Brazil and Russia have got a poorer outlook, you know, what is the rest of BRICS doing? Because that will, to a large extent, impact on our future economic development and position going forward. On the next page, while saying that and mentioning all these concerns, you indicated that over the medium term, you know, growth is 3.1% in 2015, which is next year, from a 1.7, which is a dramatic increase. So what are the catalysts that you see at this stage to get to a 3.1%, because it's nearly double up on our economic growth, and then obviously 3.4 in 2016. So somewhere there must be something that will kickstart that. And I mean, in terms of the outlooks and BRICS partners, I find it difficult to identify what will really do that and whether that is realistic. Because remember, you can put anything on paper. Paper is very patient, they don't comprehend that. But it must be realistic and a viable proposition. Then, I very much agree with you with the need on the skills base. I mean, because you can again do anything. You can have fantastic plans. You can even budget. If you don't have the skills to implement actively, you've got major, major problems. Madam Chair, must I stop now? I'm only at half now.
As much as possible, you must ask as many questions as you could, but be mindful of the time.
I'm capitalizing on the
No, you don't have unlimited time. We do have limited time, unfortunately. Can I refer you to those many questions I already have noted?
There are just one very important thing for me. And that is with regards to the spending that you've mentioned and the decrease in CIFA, the allocations to CIFA. Because that we see an increase next year and then again a dramatic decrease in the economic planning and coordination. I can understand that the current one is because of CIFA, but you know, there are things happening in that, and what is the possible impact of the less money or CIFA on the economic development on the lower level and specifically on the new Ministry of Economic Development. I'm a bit concerned that they might have a high expectation. CIFA is with us, you know, and there might be conflicts developing over time. So, I mean, how do you clarify that position more?
Yes, okay. Thank you. That's in terms of transfers.
My belief is that the government has intervened during the crisis. In that kind of intervention, by creating conducive climate for private sector to operate, so many interventions really to try to avoid job losses. In my view, I really, really insist because I think the department will support the business private sector, if government intervenes, the model creation is supposed to be maintained by private sector in essence. I think the government is playing this role, but what is the real problem of private sector not really exploiting that type of situation? I wanted to ask that.
Thank you very much, Chair. My first question does dovetail a little into what the Honourable Maria asked, and that really is around the growth rate, Mr. Kamara. That we are sitting at 1.7% growth rate. You've given quite an optimistic assessment of the future of decreasing unemployment and significantly increased growth rates. And apart from keeping our fingers crossed, what else are we looking at doing to get the growth rate up? And you also made the comment about inflation that has been severely affected by the interest rate, by the exchange rate. And I was just wondering how you would see that change, whether we can expect anything from growth that would actually improve our exchange rate. Then the other comment was just with regards to the audits of the department. I noticed, which is an aspect highlighted by the Auditor General on page 19, that you gave the audit opinion of the department's financial employment, which is good. But with emphasis on matter, and I was wondering what the particular emphasis, was there anything particularly notable amongst that, amongst the emphasis on matter? Thank you very much.
Can we park that to the Auditor General of what they are going to do with us? Am I right? Thank you. The next is Mr. Babu Matra.
And Chairperson, thank you very much to you, Mr. Kumar, and your team for the presentation. My first question to you, it has to do with the very existence of the Commission, for example, as you referred to it. The first question is, as you said, you are a chapter taking institution under the Constitution. And coming to your presentation, it looks like you are struggling with
issues of enforceability of your recommendations, your suggestions to various organs of state. My first question will be, do you have any other idea maybe that could be enhanced across the spectrum to improve the way the commission is supposed to be taken together with its views? For instance, how things you recommend have to ring bells in all the quarters across the spheres of government. That's one. Two, I'm thinking that there is a recorded opinion around the fact that consistently it has been government has been growing quality jobs in South Africa for a while now, not private sector. Because my view is that we have been speaking kindly about how private sector has been the driver of employment, but we are not actually noticing the intricate and sometimes the reactionary ways in which corporate structures has been behaving for a while now. I have been told in some instances that it is probably about R1 trillion sitting with corporate structures that is supposed or should have been invested back into the economy in various ways, either in growing their corporations or even furthering certain angles from which their corporations will benefit and enrich the economy. And it looks like consistently an angle of infrastructure has helped, or it's certain assumptions that private sector will give back or will invariably react to infrastructure investment by doing something. But we are not actually specific on exactly what is it that is expected. Because you can drive infrastructure, you can create all the beautiful roads and structures to support the economy. But if a company that is supposed to have grown its business from employing 4,000 workers, 8,000 workers, move charging to Mozambique and establish a plant and hire 2,500 Mozambicans, it basically uses your roads to get to Mozambique, but it's not investing where it initially started. So for me, there has to be an instructional role that is expected of private sector. That of give and take. Two, you seem to have good recommendations that you make, in particular in your latter age. And there seems to be no expected response on your side, also even from the people that you recommend. My worry is, in particular with this department, if you recommend strong coordination role, in particular with municipalities, and this department is not able to carry that task in one financial year, and then it follows the following financial year, it means you will consistently continue to report that the coordination role of the department is not threatening the economic participation activities in the municipalities, which means there is nothing tangible that the municipalities consistently plan to enrich their economic policies through local economic growth. And that at some time there is nothing tangible that the local municipalities are taking the heat either from national or province, as what constitute local opportunities. Which means we will continue to have all these expectations about what local input has to be, but there is no tangible activities to support that. Then my Parliament. The inability of the department to consistently hold the control together and the effect that has in the future of the financial activities of the department insofar as being disciplined and so on and so forth. Thank you.
Thank you, I'm taking this as a workshop that whoever wants to channel the issues are not very intelligent to the SHC chair, acting chair, but to all of us, we need to, because we are all playing this oversight role, we must be able to also recommend to them on issues that we feel that they must also deal with as a commission. So that's what I said by saying this is a workshop. To perform a workshop rather than a meeting where we're going to be listening to somebody and getting a feedback and so forth. We're going to be having a discussion. And Dr. Malika.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is around the 40,000 jobs that were created. I would be interested in knowing as to what kinds of jobs are those. Are they permanent jobs, temporary, and also, if possible, at which salary levels are these jobs? Because one would be very much interested to know as to what kind of jobs does the government create, because one will also have a problem of the definition of the word job by the department. When does a job become a job? Comparing each other with where is the job, because one gets up in the morning, go and work, and when it comes to the issue of the remuneration and something else. So this is why I very much interested in knowing as to what kind of jobs are we talking about when we're talking about 49,000 jobs today.
Thank you, Baba Mika.
Thanks, Jefferson. I just want to find out from the FSC if they have shared this information with the department. Because I'm looking at page 18, and I'm very worried if that is the case, if they have never sent to the department these matters that are raised here. And also, I don't know whether it's the case of language, this is another subject. I think the recommendation. They can just elaborate what do they ask when we unblock prisoners in Lima scenarios. What does it mean?
Thank you. Is that all? I'm going to go to the next. I'll come back to you. And then we'll run through the further.
Thank you very much. In this global rebalancing of power, I want to find out from the chair whether he's been able to give us an indication of whether or not South Africa has been able to use the links or the trade block breaks and the links with the G20 to improve its or the country's developmental capacity. other very important factor is when you conduct your research, are you able to establish whether the political elites and the trust and the cooperation of the bureaucrats and the public sector. I'm asking this question precisely because if we keep talking about government having created an environment that is conducive for business to flourish, but then it is also another challenge where businesses seem not to be willing to take advantage of those opportunities or to play their part in the economy. The third part is, would you say that the public service enjoys enough autonomy for it to be able at some point to reach a requisite level of professionalism? Thank you very much.
I'm not sure whether the last question is clear.
I'm saying... Are you comfortable?
I'm comfortable. If you're comfortable, it's fine.
Okay.
It's not for me to be comfortable. So. Madam Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, the Commission, Mr. Kumalo has mentioned that the Commission is concerned with intergovernmental fiscal relations. What I want to know or given more information on is when, if the Commission is concerned with the intergovernmental fiscal relations, when the provincial government is not doing well, the national government is doing, maybe the national government, let's say it is doing well, but the provincial government that works with the national government is not doing well, and there is this commission in between or on top of them. Given how I, by Section 13 of the Constitution, I'm not sure, am I not repeating the same questions that have been asked? What are your authorities towards the national government to see to it that the provincial government is also performing well as the national government is performing? I am asking this question because when the Auditor General is giving, is doing in and or its audit report, it might, the audit report may reflect that the national government is doing well, but within our provincial government, there is always, you'll find the worst, as much as the national government has done very well, you find the worst part in our provincial government and other Orlando states that are involved in that same department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think your powers has the question, whether yes, you have powers, but are you able to act? I think I hope the question is not related to what is happening currently in South Africa, so that it begins to shake up also other institutions unnecessarily. As I hope, it's not related. And I hope, since it could be a general message, and I'm hoping that you'll respond to that because you're dealing with that. All while I know that you must report to Parliament, you must report to the legislature. That's the constitutional requirement. Members have been given this book, the Bible, for our constitution. So I think it's important that we visit it and to see in order to understand where, who the FSC is, their functions, where do they derive their powers and functions from. I think it is important that we visit this document from time to time. I'm happy that you are mentioning the fact that the department was just established in 2008. 2009, but literally started working and being audited from 10 to 10 because when it started, it was still established itself. I think it's very important that we know that. And we take cognizance of that. That when it started in 2009, somebody said it was during the global economic crisis. And it immediately came in with the response plan, if you recall that. And that response plan was adopted by the cabinet for the department to run it. And by then, the department didn't have sufficient staff. So the role of the department together with parliament, we had to help them also to ensure that they get implemented. So I just want that when we look at things, we don't look at them in isolation. We also take some of the issues into cognizance. The question I had, Babu Kumalo also. It's just to explain the role that the department has in as far as job creation. It's coordination role because it's not providing jobs. It's role to ensure coordination. And by coordination means that it must come up with plans, I agree, that will ensure that every role player intergovernmentally, intra-governmentally, it is coordinated in terms of reporting, whether they are efficiently creating jobs in their hands or they are not. And also to follow up whether they have actually created those jobs. It is the role of the department. And if not, it has to come up with the explanations as to why those jobs were not created. And of course, we all will understand that that's not an easy task to coordinate your colleagues and to ensure that they report to you in terms of their plans and in terms of the implementation of those plans. So the NGP, when it was crafted in 2010, as adopted by cabinet then, it then assisted in accelerating job creation. I'm saying this because I want us to put everything into context so that when we ask questions and when you respond, you are within that context. It came up with job drivers. And one of those job drivers is infrastructure, implementation of infrastructure. And the department has come up with a bill, I mean a law, that was enacted actually, was tested and also facilitated from this particular institution. And we saw it being passed into law, that the bill passed into law in this year. So that would ensure that at least the infrastructure creates jobs and is able also to contribute towards economic growth. Somebody said here, we think there was a question asked later to, let me refrain from referring to the question. Let me leave it to that. But what is important is that there is a plan. There is a path, a growth path, in the form of an intervention that came to direct as to how can we speedily create jobs and also grow the economy and also deal with the income disparities that you find in the country, and the issues around the gene coefficient will then be dealt with in that process. The inflation issues will be dealt with in the process. So I think those are the issues I wanted to highlight. But then I still have a question, like it was asked. You know, when I look at some of the graphs about the Kumasi, the graphs they include before 2009. And that is to tell you how the whole pattern has been going through. You know, if I look at the graph that you have put before us, the first one, related to unemployment rate. It is 5 years because it's starting there from 1997, and it tells you where the unemployment rate was, even though it's not full. But then it tells you that it's something that has been there, down there, and it's going up and down since then. Of course, due to several factors like that. But when you look at 2009-2010. You can see that the curve begins then to shape otherwise, because it tells you there is the employment growth taking place. That's not the graph that you're providing us with. And therefore, perhaps you must also deal with the question that says, that asks whether, how can we ensure that we don't see many jobs created from the public sector side as compared to the private sector side. What can be improved there? How do you advise that the private sector begins to shape up also when it comes to the employment growth? Yeah. I've stopped my colleagues from asking too many questions. The last one was on the expansion I needed around the wooden expansion. What I don't understand is saying that smoother expenditure through phasing of transfers to entities across each quarter. Are you saying irrespective of the entity's performance? Because my understanding is that you only transfer after you are satisfied with the performance. You cannot just give out or just dish out money even if people do not perform. You must be able to balance between giving out money against performance so that you are able also to instill discipline, financial, fiscal discipline within your institution. I thought that was the intention by the department, why the CFO is here, perhaps she can also educate us on that. Because I have a challenge, I have a problem also. If we are just going to transfer and it's going to spread across IPAM, then it's going to be a challenge of accountability also, because we will want to know why are we transferred funds when we know that other funds were not used. That question will come back again, and I know that you will be coming again in your analysis to say, you know, department transferred money irrespective of institutional performance. I think we must also try to balance when we do that analysis. I wanted to expand shape on the alignment issue, the performance indicators that do not align with the targets and indicators of the NGP infrastructure plan and the MPF. I remember I asked you that whether you are talking to the current situation or the previous situation, and you said the current one. That I don't understand. May you be able, because we've dealt with this matter, especially when we were dealing with the AGPs, for us to be able to ask relevant, correct questions we need to expatiate on them so that we can be able to clear our minds and see where we left when we ask questions around the APC. I think it will help us.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members, for the myriad of questions and comments that I have to respond to. I must say upfront.
Kumalo, can we afford ourselves a 5 minute break, first year to start this year, so that we can also allow you to organize questions and so the response. You don't need to respond. If you feel that there are certain issues that really can be dealt with amongst ourselves, let's deal with them, let me discuss them, and then come to a particular conclusion and guide you as to our feeling, because it is important that we do so. Members, may we break for 5 minutes?